The views and opinions expressed here are those of the guests, and are not the official position of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I extol those who with loving care and compassionate concern feed the hungry, clothe the naked, and house the homeless. He who notes the sparrows fall will not be unmindful of such service.
The Mormon Channel now presents Faith in Action. Welcome to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel, a show about welfare, humanitarian aid, and service around the world. I have a room full today to talk about a special service project on the Navajo Indian Reservation. Let me go from my left to my right, Nate Cryer. Nate, welcome. Hey. How old are you?
17.
Nate, 17. Russell McDonald.
Hello.
And how old?
17.
Okay, I won't ask John. Yeah. John Norton how old he is, but welcome, John.
Thank you very much.
To have you here. And Sam Norton must be?
Hey there, I'm 17.
And you are John's son.
John's son,
okay.
Yes.
And over here to my right, Alan Erb.
Right.
Nice to have you here.
It's good to be here, and I'm as old as all the rest of them added together.
I think I'd probably win that one, but we'll stop there. Let's start from... And I don't know who to talk about, who to ask this question to, so just jump in if you have an answer. How did this whole service project get started? What was the nemesis? What got it rolling?
That's probably my question to take. And in November of last year, my wife and I took our 15-year-old grandson on a trip to Mexico to build houses for indigent people in Mexico. We were actually doing that because John Norton and his son Sam had gone the year before with the same organization. About midway through the week, my grandson looked at me and said, "Grandpa, I will never be the same again." And I decided right then that there were 17 young men back in our ward that needed some experience like that. I came back. We tried at first to figure out how to go back to Mexico. The safety concerns there had become increasingly more complicated. And so I started looking around for something else to do. Fortunately, I'm retired. I probably spent 40 hours on a telephone making telephone calls to anyone and everyone. Someone would give me a referral. I'd make the next phone call, and I honestly can't tell you who told me about or how I got in touch with people that could ultimately help us put this together on the Navajo Reservation, but that was the impetus behind it. And fortunately, along the way, we were able to make contact with the right people that were able to put us in touch with this project and enable us to do it.
John and Alan, were you in the construction business, or are you in the construction business? Some experience in this?
John has some experience. I'll let him describe that. I'm not sure which end of a hammer to use.
Alan's being modest. He can swing a hammer pretty good. I had a little construction experience as I was starting to attend college. I was working back in Connecticut, doing some framing and drywall sheetrocking. And then later, before I had graduated from college, had a little business with a buddy of mine. We'd finish basements. But really, Alan made some good contacts, and we were able to get a few contractors that were very knowledgeable. And it just came together miraculously, I believe, that we had the right people there that knew the different pieces of putting a house together, and it just came together wonderfully.
So besides this group, there were many others that were involved then that went with you. Is that correct?
Well, we had 13 of the 17 young men from the priest quorum ultimately went.
Mm-hmm. And which ward and which stake?
This is the Pleasant Grove, Grove Creek stake, Grove Creek 5th Ward.
Okay.
Somewhere along the way, it just became clear to me that we needed to have a number of contractors, at least one general contractor, possibly multiple contractors, not only for their expertise but also for the equipment that was necessary. The Navajo Royalty Trust Fund, which is the organization here in Utah that funded the project and put $40,000 worth of material on the job site, made clear that we had to provide the expertise and we had to provide the equipment and we needed to do this with no trace left behind. So I also made another week's 40 hours minimum worth of telephone calls to every contractor and every referral to a contractor that I could possibly find. I had so many contractors that I had contacted, I finally had to make a spreadsheet to remember who I'd talked to and what they had said. My goal was to have four or five experienced builders or contractors so that we could divide the young men up in smaller groups to be able to do different things on the house at different times. In 5 days to build a house, you've got to have multiple things going on all the time. Miraculously, I was able to find a couple of contractors, but somewhere within 2 weeks of leaving, we were still three people short. And I just knew they'd call. I didn't know who they would be. I just knew they would call, and they did.
When you made the initial plea for help, was it like, you want us to go where and do what?
For free.
Pretty much. But I would say that it's amazing the number of people in Utah County who recognize the great blessings that they enjoy and are willing to serve. There were many who said, keep in touch with me if you ever do this again. There were others who said, if you aren't able to find someone, I will do whatever I have to do to change my schedule to go. And I didn't want to create havoc in people's lives, and so I kept those names on my spreadsheet, but I just continued to contact other people. And ultimately, the last two or three that called were people who had been told by someone else that I had communicated to that was not able to go themselves. That just kept the flow of information going, and they called me. I needed a plumber and an electrician, and that's what the last two people were that called.
Set the scene a little bit, the stage, and there's a little corner, I understand, of Utah where the Navajo Reservation is. Tell me what it's like. What does it look like there when you drive in the first time and see where you're going to be working? Nice. What'd you see, Nate? What was your first impression?
See, we didn't see anything. That's the point. There was nothing there. It's desolate. There's nothing but dirt and hot air. I mean, these guys are living in trailers, and that's what made what we did so important to them.
Russell, what did you live in while you were there? Were you in tents, or what did you have?
We actually lived at a house owned by a college. So our house was actually pretty nice with running water and electricity. So we stayed there, but we took a 30-minute drive out to the reservation every day. But on the way there, you could totally tell where it started. Once you got there, you could see like a house, and then from 10 miles, there'd be nothing, and then maybe another small shack and just dirt and, yeah, plants.
Russell said that the house we were staying in was pretty nice, but that is definitely in comparison to what the Navajos had. We go back to our little place we were staying every night after we worked on the job site, and there was no air conditioning. The windows had no screens, so we couldn't open up the windows without letting bugs come in. Partway through the week, half of the house's electricity, you know, kind of went down for about a day, and we finally figured out why, and we flipped a couple switches and got it working again. But it was pretty rough. You'd come back and you'd shower after a day of work, and you'd go sit in your room, and after 5 minutes, you're already sweating again because it was so hot. Mm-hmm. It was like we were in, you know, a big sauna house after we'd come home from working. So,
when you, John, when you gathered the whole group together and started talking to the young men, and I would assume their parents, did you know what you were getting into? Did you really know had you driven out there to see what the conditions were like?
Well, Alan was able to make a trip out there before we actually landed a week or so later. He knew the conditions. He knew it was going to be tough. We had prepped the boys a little bit with some of that information. But I will say that this kind of turned from a project of swinging some hammers and driving some nails into a true high adventure, and then went beyond that and became, I think, ultimately a gift for a family and for generations there. And none of us realized that up front. We really didn't get that until midway through the week when this family tried to say thanks to us again and again and again in different ways, baking us cakes, offering us Navajo tacos for lunch. The person that we built the home for, his name is Joni Yellowman, is actually a painter, and his home burnt up less than a year ago.
He's never had a home.
His trailer burnt up, and all of the paintings that he had been working on burnt up along with the trailer. And he has 9 children and I think close to a dozen grandchildren, and really doesn't have much out there. And so, you know, as we were building this, we saw the gratitude in his eyes and the eyes of his children and grandchildren as they would come around the work site almost daily and, you know, jump up on the house and run across and through the 2x4s and across the back of our trailers, just playing around. They were really excited to see it all come to fruition. And that's when we realized that we were literally handing a gift to a family. Became more than just this project.
How did you decide, or who decided, who got the house?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and fortunately, once I got in touch with the Navajo Royalty Trust Fund, the problem of identifying who a house was built for, it really resides with the Navajo Council, and the Royalty Trust Fund did all of that coordinating. They identified the family. They, of course, as I already mentioned, provided the materials. They coordinate with the local Indian tribal government and with the potential homeowner, in this case, Jonah. So those kinds of decisions were made for us by someone else. When I went down about a month before to meet with the chief administrator of the Royalty Trust Fund and to meet Jonah, I found a couple of things. First, the needs on the reservation were beyond imagination. I asked him at one point, how many homes do you need built? And he didn't even flinch. He said 10,000. That's just mind-boggling. He also told me that the Department of Labor keeps statistics on poverty in America, and those statistics typically start at a high of around $20,000 a year and go to a low of $6,000 a year. And then he said to me, you will not meet anyone today who makes anywhere near $6,000 a year. The conditions are just amazing. The needs are just amazing. You always wonder in these kinds of circumstances, are you providing help to someone who might be able to provide some help for themselves and just won't do it? And that, I think, is another reason that Jonah became endeared to us. When I went down several weeks before, Jonah had literally, with a hand shovel, dug a 1-foot-deep, 1,300-square-foot hole for the footings. He had already laid the footings. There is no water. He had to drive 12 miles with a 50-gallon container to have the water in order to make the concrete. And he was starting on the cinder block walls that would create a small crawl space underneath. We asked, it's impossible to build a house if you have to also lay the concrete, wait for it to dry, or build a subfloor. So we had asked that the subfloor be completed. And he had done a major part of that work by himself. And then he did have some help to come in and finalize the subfloor, which was in place at the time that we got there. But here's someone who was willing to labor and work for themselves, and that, of course, makes you feel a lot better about trying to help someone.
Of the 10,000 homes that are needed, are there trust fund dollars available for them all, or is this a problem as well?
No, there are dollars available, and what is needed are people with the expertise, the equipment, and manpower to get in touch with the Utah Navajo Royalty Trust Fund and help put a dent in this problem. We would love to see others get involved. People are free to contact me if they want to. I'm willing to share with people the things we did right, the things we did wrong, the things that we learned from this whole experience that will improve how we do it next and perhaps help someone else that wants to do it. There is wonderful resources available within venture crews, priest groups, other organizations here in Utah County or in Salt Lake County, and there is an incredible need 300 miles away. It's almost incredible to imagine that 300 miles away there are that many people living without electricity and water and sewer, but it's true. And there are resources available to assist with materials.
You're listening to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. Today we're visiting with Nate Cryer, Russ McDonald, John Norton, Sam Norton, and Alan Erb, who built a home on the Navajo Indian Reservation in 5 days.
Now, I understand the home that you built had the had a stub for electricity, water, and but you don't hook it up because...
That's exactly right. They haven't laid the infrastructure for it. And we believe that it will happen sometime soon. I think there are a couple of tribes down there. One's a little more aggressive about doing that and laying that infrastructure down to help the members of their tribe. But the one that we worked with wasn't as motivated to do that. But you're right. The home that we built is ready for, you know, the water and sewage and electricity to arrive. It's important to note that that trust fund has dollars available for building materials, but they make a note that it can't be used to pay for the labor. So I think that's why this is a perfect marriage of young men who have the desire to help, individuals in the area who can donate maybe a week to go down that have the skills and the tools. And when you arrive, you can see that all the materials are there for you, so you can get going immediately. That's really why we decided to talk about this and bring it to light, because there is a great opportunity for organizations, individuals, scout groups, young men's, and even young women organizations to make the effort, because the materials are available.
Let me ask Nate, Russell, and Sam, the night before you left, kind of a sleepless night? Were you wondering, what have I gotten myself into? How did you feel? Start with Nate. What was the feeling of that night before, and did you take a bus? How did you get there?
We were going to carpool there, but the night before, I was excited and scared of that. You know, I feel in the same time, it's your stomach's twisted upside down, and you don't know what to expect. I actually didn't get any sleep. I was preparing a devotional for this trip. So I got half asleep, but I slept in the car. It was something I've never done before, something you don't know what to expect, and I was excited overall.
Russell, how about you?
And I don't want to put words in Nate's mouth, but I heard him say earlier today that when he first heard about going, he wasn't all that excited, and it was sort of a gradual evolution. I'll let you finish that.
Yeah, well, first we were going to do a rafting trip, and that fell through. And you know, a whole bunch of teenagers, they want to go have fun. And when I heard we're going to go from doing the rapids to building a house, I'm like, oh no, what went wrong? What the heck, you know? But as it was, I started getting to know what we were going to do and how we were going to do it. I started slowly getting excited. I didn't know too much about it at the beginning, but by the end, I knew what we were going to do, and I was ready to go. I was ready to serve, and I was excited.
Russell.
The day before, we found out we were leaving pretty early, and we're like, oh, should we just not even go to sleep, just stay up all night? And I'm glad I didn't, because it took so much energy, and it was very physically demanding to build a house. But before we even went out, the day before, I didn't know what to expect. I was like, oh, we're building a house. It will be fun, and I don't know. But you just can't explain the feeling that you get from actually doing it, to know that you're giving someone a house. It's a wonderful feeling.
When you drove up and saw a hole in the ground and, I guess, a floor, Sam, what'd you think? Was it a start, or can't we?
The night before we left, I was trying to, you know, keep it out of my mind, not think too much about it. I had no idea what I had got myself into. You know, it was over 100 degrees almost every day until the last day it actually rained a little bit. But it was extremely hot throughout the entire week. And you get there and, you know, you step out of your car and your eyes are still adjusting because it's so bright and so hot. And all you see is the floor. It's a little intimidating because you know you have, you know, 5 days total to build an entire 1,300 square foot house, and you got a bunch of teenagers. You know, it was intimidating, but it was also very it was a challenge. And a lot of the times, that's what it takes for teenagers to really get to work is a challenge, and something that they can see when it's finished, that they learned something and that they maybe had a really good experience.
Were each of you assigned a specific job, or was it different every day? I mean, were you assigned to help the framer? Were you assigned to help plumbing? How did that work?
Well, at the beginning, the plan was to have everyone in crews and assign everyone to do certain things. But the first day, as soon as someone said, a hole needs to be dug, four guys, oh, I want to do it. A wall needs to put up. And the other four guys, oh, I want to do that. And so the groups of teams, they kind of just went away, and everyone volunteered to do the work, and that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Russell, what did you do mostly?
At the first day, it was digging, just nonstop digging for the – we built a latrine, mm-hmm. porta potty. So we dug half the hole and found out that we dug it in the wrong spot. So we moved it, dug another hole, finally got deep enough. Like halfway through, we hit diamonds, the hardest material in the universe. And it was hard, but we finally got deep enough. And then we also have to fill in the footings around the floor that we did. So it was just a ton of digging. After that, I just was asking around. The contractor would say, oh, yeah, you can help me put up, you know, like the plastic sheeting around the outside of the wall. And then the last day, I actually did a lot of rock walling.
Sheetrock.
Mm-hmm. I did a lot of sheetrock. And just, it was
That's
incredible.
Pretty heavy.
Yeah, it was incredible how much
degrees.
I learned.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, like, I took so much out of this. And because all the new skills that I've learned that I'll probably remember for the rest of my life helps. And, yeah, it was a wonderful experience.
Sam, what was the moment for you? What was the defining moment of this whole process?
Well, it's a hard question. There are a lot of great, great moments in this. One of my favorite things about this trip was really interacting with the Jonah Yellman family. Like my dad was talking about, there were his grandchildren were running around the whole time. We'd get to snap a couple pictures of them, and but interacting with them and interacting with his family and seeing his lifestyle before, how he was living in, you know, just a trailer. Just he would paint all day. He'd come out of his trailer every once in a while. But we were putting up a house for him and his family, and it meant more to him than I think we'll ever understand. We come from our, you know, our little community where we, you know, we don't think we're spoiled, but compared to how these people were living, we're incredibly spoiled, and we have so much that it's really eye-opening to go down and have this experience because they have nothing, and they're incredibly grateful for what we did.
Somebody used the term hitting the wall. Anybody want to explain that to me, what that means?
Okay, so on the first day, I was working, and we got two walls up. And just seeing that, I just didn't want to stop. I wanted to keep working. But as we woke up early the next day, I could feel it. I was getting tired, and we'd have to work, and I'd be like, oh, when's the day almost over? And then it got to the point where I didn't know if I wanted to keep going, and that's where I think I hit the wall. And I was thinking how when you're running, like in track, you'd hit the wall, but you still finish. And I was wondering, why am I finishing? Who am I finishing for? And I realized it was for Jonah Yellaman. I was going to finish this project for Jonah Yellaman. And just knowing that I was doing a service for someone else helped me finish and push through that wall and just finish this project for him. It was incredible.
There's a lot of Jonahs out there that need to be helped yet. What do you say to somebody who's thinking about a project like this? Ellen?
Well, what comes to mind is something that Art of the Cap said when she was General Young Women president, and I've never forgotten this. I may not get the quote exactly right, but it's very close. She said, "We're raising a generation that does not feel needed." And what she meant by that is that unlike in generations past when literally the success or failure of a family depended upon how many capable and workable young men or young women it had in a family, literally the things that boys and girls in a family did kept a family alive. Now we almost try and manufacture work, wash the dishes, mow the lawn, and certainly those things need to be done, but they're not life-threatening. For 1 week, for a group of 13 boys, it wasn't that way. This was a real, not manufactured, clear, unmistakable need. I can't describe to you the way these young men rose to that level. My first concern, I knew we had to dig a hole for an outhouse, and I agonized all the way down, who am I going to ask to do that? And I said, okay, I need someone to dig a hole. And two young men, Russ was one of them, the other was Wes Alder, immediately said, I'll dig it. And I can't tell you the number of times during that week that I had young men come up to me. The one thing that I probably heard more than anything else was, I'm done, what do you want me to do next?
Interesting. When you look back, Sam, did you think you could, in your own mind, think you could do that? Do you think you could push yourself to that point? Were you surprised at what you accomplished?
I was very surprised. I think it has a lot to do with the positive peer pressure that came with the people around me, my fellow priests in the quorum, my leaders, the contractors that were there. They were very friendly, very... very encouraging, push you to be your best all the time, push you to keep working, to work hard. They'd give you a water break here and there, but then they'd say, let's get back to work, let's keep going. A lot of the time when you're pushed to the limit, you can go through the wall for the ultimate reason that you're doing it. It's the final service, the final outcome. And it's a lot easier when you're there with your peers, with others that are encouraging you.
John, tell me about the house itself. 1,300 square feet, is that what I heard?
Mm-hmm.
Like 6 bedrooms, 2 baths, air conditioning, and all the comforts of home.
Yeah, and a pool in the back.
And a pool in the back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty basic home. There was a large entryway into a big family room. We were going to kind of divide it into a kitchen dining area, but they chose to remove that wall. So there was a large area with the kitchen, dining, and family room, and then as you turn right, you could go back into 3 rooms. There was kind of a master bedroom that was just a little bit bigger than the others, nothing really extravagant, and then there were 2 other bedrooms. So 3 bedrooms, a bath, a kitchen, kind of dining area, and a front family room with lots of windows looking out onto Monument Valley, which is down in that Four Corners area. We also put an outhouse, as we talked about before, off to the side. The boys started digging a hole in one area, and we realized the wind took that right into the home, so we moved the outhouse to the other side of the home. And then they actually, at the very end, in about 3 hours, put up a very large deck on the back. We had a little extra material, and Jonah said, boy, it would really be wonderful if I could get a wooden deck on the back of this thing to look out over Monument Valley, which is where he did use a lot of his paintings.
Ask Nate about that deck. I heard him say something earlier today about it.
The deck is just one more
miracle.
I mean, you can see the hand of the Lord all throughout this project, and the deck was one of them. Like John said, Jonah wanted a deck. So we went to go look at the pieces, and there is the exact amount of wood for a deck, no more, no less. So we got started on it, and we got about mostly done. And I mean, the deck's not too hard to be built. We just got done building the house. So Jonah walks out on the back door, and he looks and he smiles, the biggest smile I've ever seen. And he just walks back in. And that right there is made my trip. I mean, just to see how grateful he was just for a deck. And it was so cool. He was so ecstatic because he has a deck. And I loved it. I loved that I was able to give that to him. I thought it was a really cool experience.
We built that deck, incidentally, in 3 hours on the last morning.
And including footings and everything else that was necessary.
Exactly. The holes were dug, the concrete was mixed and poured, and Jonah had some old teepee poles, and that was what was used for the posts and the railing.
You're listening to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. Today we're visiting with Nate Cryer, Russ McDonald, John Norton, Sam Norton, and Alan Erb, who together with other young men built a home on the Navajo Indian Reservation in 5 days. How is the church in that area? Branches, I would assume. How far do they have to go to attend a service?
It's a great question. The branch right now is located in Mexican Hat. As part of this project, one of the sisters in our ward decided that she would also like to do a clothing collection. And so we actually took 15 large garbage bags filled with clothing and other items to the Mexican Hat branch president, who I met and delivered those items to. He then told me that the church has purchased a large piece of property in Monument Valley, still on the Utah side of the line, and is in process of planning a full-size chapel. This will have an enormous impact on the Utah portion of the reservation there. There are very few attractive churches of any sort in that area, and the Mexican Hat branch building is the smallest church-owned piece of property I think I've ever seen. A full-size chapel will have enormous impact on this area. I might add, just by way of background, that the Utah portion of the Navajo Reservation is the smallest of the four states in which the Utah or the Navajo Reservation exists, contiguous states. It's the largest reservation in the world. It's 25 million acres. It's the size of West Virginia. It's just that portion in Utah that requires 10,000 homes. You never know how your service and things like this are going to impact others. We did not know, I did not know, even from my pre-visit, that one of Jonah's daughters and her husband living in Arizona were, at the time that we were planning this, just had met the missionaries and were starting to take the discussions. Just prior to our arrival, they moved back to the reservation near where Jonah lives. And one day, the missionaries showed up at our job site to continue the discussions. That, coupled with efforts like we undertook, coupled with a much more large and visible congregation or building in the nearby area, can have such an enormous impact on the church's influence in this area. So it's one of the reasons that we would like to see some of the resources that are in the northern part of Utah expended in that southern area to have an influence on the reservation there.
I understand you had kind of a faith-promoting experience getting there, picking up a hitchhiker. Could you tell me that story?
On the way there, taking a nap, wake up, and I realize we're doing a U-turn, and finding out later that Brother Herb was touched by the Spirit, we turn around and pick up a hitchhiker named George. And he got in, and while he never seemed to stop talking, I did take something out of what he had to say. I guess the day before, that Sunday, he went to an LDS church and, just went to church. But while talking, he said, I prayed and I was only standing on the curb for 10 minutes until you showed up. And that shows that the spirit from him praying touched Brother Herb and had us pick him up. And from he was hitchhiking for 7 months, and he was going exactly where we were going. He was a Navajo Indian himself, so we picked him up, and we pretty much just dropped him off at his house. It was incredible.
So the odds of the odds of you picking him up were astronomical then, that last little journey, part of his journey.
Well, we actually picked him up in Spanish Fork, and I told the young men that evening that I'm not exaggerating. I have never in my life picked up a hitchhiker. For fear of safety, concern in this situation, the spirit just started working on me, and then I looked around and thought, well, if he is going to be belligerent, we outnumber him. I've never picked up a hitchhiker in my life. That was the first time. And George actually taught us a lot about the Navajo people and about how they live, about how he lives. We had an opportunity to share a discussion about Navajo worship of land and earth and how that connects to their worship of God and Christ. And it was an interesting discussion. And he had at one point met the missionaries. He had a Book of Mormon. Who knows what small influence we could possibly have by doing something like that.
Let me ask each of you as I go around again, and I ask, a lot of times on this program, mostly on this program, we're talking with service missionaries who have been assigned to other countries. And I like to ask, as you jumped in the cars, headed home, looked out the back window, what did you think about of that week?
We gave him a house. We gave him a life. And hopefully he can associate that with not only us, but the church and see it in a positive view. Who knows? Like Brother Herb said, what can become of it? It's just our part to move him along in his life. So,
what did you think, Russ? You think I'll never see this again, or I'd like to do this again, or man, I'm glad this is done? What goes through your mind?
I couldn't believe it was over. I thought we had one day left. Somehow the days got mixed up, and they're like, okay, let's go. And I wasn't ready to go. I don't know. And I wanted to do it again. I was hoping that we'd maybe do it again sometime, but I don't know. Just all the experiences that we had, and I could tell that everyone that went was a lot closer than we were before we got there. And I just had an incredible time, and I wasn't ready to leave.
Mm-hmm. Sam, what were you thinking?
This was the kind of trip that brings pre-squirms together in an unbreakable bond. The youth of the church and all teenagers around the world are a little hard-headed sometimes, but even from the way our ward was with our, you know, with the cliques that all teenagers go through, it broke all those bonds down and created one big bond of service, of something that we can all look back on as a learning experience for, you know, the talents we learned in construction, but also for the talents we learned in service and the kind of things that we learned in communicating with different groups, different people like that. It was something that the priests in our quorum can look back on their life and attribute a lot of what they've learned in their life and a lot of the service that they do. They can kind of look back on that and appreciate that.
John, the Navajos are special people and could use our help. Are you going to try to organize another trip back?
Yeah, definitely. We talked about doing this every other year, and in pre-squirm just this past week, I said by show of hands, who would be willing to do it again? And they all shot their hand up. And, you know, we'd love to do it again next year. Alan and I talked about this when we got back, and it didn't feel like it was over yet. We felt like we would really be missing the biggest piece of this if we didn't get the word out that there was this great need, that there was this Navajo Royalty Trust Fund with dollars in there that would go towards materials that would allow other groups like ours to go down and help the Navajo Nation. And so, as Sam said earlier, it was wonderful to get to know Jonah and his family and to feel the trust or the thankfulness that they had for this young this group of young men. And to see the tears flow at the end as these boys handed him the keys to his home, completed, by the way, in 5 days, was awesome. And we all left, you know, normally it's a rambunctious group of young men. It was pretty quiet leaving. But they had all been, you know, touched by the Spirit and the love that our Heavenly Father has for Jonah and his family was very evident. I mean, you feel great that you could help out, but you saw the love that your Heavenly Father has for this man and his family, and it was great. You know, you get home and you just say, how do we help other people have the same experience? How do we get the word out? So this is wonderful what you're doing here for us.
You know, for all of what happened to us, it was interesting to watch what happened to Jonah while we were there too. Jonah's probably 55 or 60 years old. He communicates with reticence. At first, all I could get from him, and I'd already mentioned the amount of work that he had done on the subfloor, after we got up the two long walls that first day, he looked at me and said, "I won, man, then you came," which was kind of his way of saying thank you. But as it is for many people, it was hard for him to just say thank you. The second day, he said, "My daughters want to make you cake," which incidentally was really good. The third day, he offered to do a sweat lodge for us, which is a sacred ordinance to him. It was another way of him trying to say thanks. The fourth day, they wanted to do Navajo tacos for us. And on the fifth day, he looked at me and said, "Thank you."
Anything that I've missed, any experiences that you want to pass along as you think about it? We cover everything pretty well.
Well, you know, as I think about what a high adventure is supposed to be, if a high adventure is supposed to teach boys things that they didn't know before, cause them to do things that they haven't done before, have experiences they haven't had before, learn more about themselves than they knew before, have feelings they haven't had before, and on top of all of that, leave a legacy that will stand for decades, then this was a sky-high adventure. As I told the young men as we drove away, you asked earlier what were we thinking. I was thinking several things, and one of the things I thought about is that road that we traveled on is one that is actually very a very famous road. It goes right to Monument Valley. There's some places along there where people stop and take photos that are seen all across the world, that long asphalt ribbon that goes down and then up for several miles to Monument Valley on the horizon. We took that road every day. And as I told them, someday in the next 10 years, you're going to be on this road with your family heading to Monument Valley. And you're going to turn left at that last asphalt road, and you're going to go down there, and you're going to walk up there with your family and say, "This is what it."
You've been listening to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. We've been talking with Nate Cryer, Russell McDonald, John Norton, Sam Norton, and Alan Erb, who spent a week building a home on the Navajo Reservation in Utah. Thank you for coming by.
Thanks, Father.
Thank you.
Thank you.